You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Robert Lee and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Victor Perez claims his maiden title at the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship.
It was an amazing day, very stressful. I didn't get much sleep last night and wasn't really hungry either. And it was just a battle out there with Matt. Just hats off to him. He gave me a hell of a fight out there and I felt like it could have gone either way. And I was fortunate enough that it was my time today.
The Frenchman will join us later in the show. The 27-year-old overcoming Matthew Southgate in a dramatic final round.
It's been a horrible season for me, and this has sorted that right out and got us right back in the hunt for getting Race to Dubai. And I think I've proven to the world this week that when I do switch it on, I can mix it with the best, and I've beaten a hell of a lot of good players this week.
And we'll also look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Mutu Activos Open de España. Hello, I'm Robert Lee, and in the studio with me I have European Tour winner, won the Italian Open back in 1992 for the first and last time, Richard Boxall.
First of all, it was 1990. And secondly, I've had a cold for 3 months.
I know, it's lasted a long time.
On and off. I get rid of it, and then it comes back after 2 weeks, and then, you know, the uncontrollable runny nose.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, not good.
I'm sure. And joining us on the show, down the line, of course, is golf journalist who, for different reasons, Kit Alexander, is behind the eight ball, physically, not in top shape.
I'm very much on the recovery bed, having had surgery on my foot about 11 days ago, had a few screws and plates put in there after tearing my ligaments and doing some other nasty stuff. But nothing would keep me off of this podcast when invited.
Kit, I need to ask, how did you actually, you know, sort your foot out or get it into this situation?
Playing football, and I changed direction rather abruptly, and my foot decided it didn't want to do that, so completely collapsed as I pushed off on it.
Oh, that's not nice. But how old are you?
I'm 33, so in some ways in my prime, but in many
right.
past it.
It's disturbing, Robert, that biologically we're both old enough to be his father.
We could be his father, but thank God, Richard, thank
we're
God.
Not.
Let's start with the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. The great and the good, Kit, turn up to the East Nuke of Fife to play what is a festival of golf.
Yeah, it's always a really interesting one, going down, not only seeing the pros that are playing, but of course the amateurs as well. You know, McIlroy was there with his dad. You got a few celebrities. Justin Timberlake playing aside. Justin Rose probably got most of the headlines this year. Bill Murray, although he injured himself in a car crash a little bit earlier in the week, just injured his hand. But it's a really interesting tournament because of not only the fact that there are those amateurs there, but kind of what that does for the pros. You see some pros who've been on great form, who don't seem to fancy the format that much, and it affects them. Others just seem to thrive on that more relaxed atmosphere.
Victor Perez certainly thrived because he claimed his maiden European Tour title, and he became the Frenchman, the first rookie to win the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship at St Andrews Old Course, just 15 miles from the place he currently calls home, Dundee, Richard. You wouldn't have thought that, would you?
What?
Young man about town,
yes.
Travelling the world, globetrotting. You sort of think Monte Carlo, Nice,
yes.
The Riviera, but no, he's living in Dundee.
Yes, or Cannes even. You should look quite like old.
I do like
Cannes, don't you?
Yeah.
Like that. You won a tournament down there.
Fourth major, that was.
You won a tournament down there.
But Cannes Open, it was
exactly.
Sprayed in champagne.
He two-putted Kit and picked up 1,500 quid first prize.
Yes, 1,500 quid, which I gave a third, of course, to the French authorities
and
for
their tax.
What I had left wasn't worth bringing home, but there we are. You always remember your first win, Richard. They were all there.
Oh, you do.
What,
now,
yeah.
Listen, how did you get onto this can bit? Oh, but Victor Perez, where he lives.
Dundee,
it's strange, isn't it?
Astonishing, isn't it?
But I think his girlfriend, partner, whatever. What do
We're
going
to find
right
out later on the show. We're
today.
Looking forward to it. We're
yeah.
going to speak to Victor.
I think that's where she lives, and, you know, love is a great puller, isn't it, Robert?
Tense battle coming down the back nine, really, and it seemed to be between two players, Kit, Matthew Southgate and, of course, Victor Perez.
Yeah, Southgate looked like he had it under control for most of the final round, to be honest. Always had a slender advantage, but just as the heat came on, one or two shots, kind of not seen all week, slipped in, a couple of sort of duffed pitches, which he'd obviously been trying to avoid a little bit of chipping, I think, all week. But generally, he played really well. He will be disappointed, but two bogeys in the final five holes opened the door for Perez, who he just stayed there, waited for it to come to him, and he has got a record of winning. He's won at whatever level he's been on every year since turning pro. Back in sort of the end of 2015, he won on the Alps Tour in 2016, the Challenge Tour in 2017 and 2018, earning promotion that season. So he's shown he knows how to get the job done. So, you know, this rather than a flash in the pan, when you saw the quality he exhibited, not only in the skill it took to play the shots, but also the mental side of the game, a really encouraging first win for Perez.
It certainly was. And, you know, Matthew Southgate outside the top 100 coming into the week, yeah. Richard, Victor Perez up nearer the 100 than he was the 50.
Yeah.
Amazing when you see the quality of their golf coming down the stretch, you wonder why they're in the positions they're in.
You do? You think, you know, where's he been all year? I remember I was at a little airport somewhere in Ireland. It wasn't Dublin Airport.
Shannon.
Might have been. But I was with Matthew Southgate and we were outside the airport waiting for a flight to come in or whatever we were waiting for. Anyway, we're going home and he was so down. Mm. He said, you know, he said, everything I do is going wrong, which I think he said with Tim Barton in a couple of interviews. He said, everything I do is going wrong. He said, but the one thing I will say about
Matt... Do you mean by that every decision I make to try and change something doesn't work out?
No, you know what it's like, Robert, as a player. You're going, it's just all going wrong, everything you do. You're just thinking, when's that double? When's that triple coming?
Oh, OK.
You know, and I'll give him one... I'll give Matthew this. He said to me, I think we were going to somewhere like Sweden or somewhere like that. Anyway, I sat next to him on the plane going out and we had a long chat and... Give him full credit. He said it only takes 1 week. He said, and he said, when I see that week, he said, I will seize it. And, you know, I've got to give him full credit, Kit. He did take his chance yesterday. And I thought with three holes to go, he might just sneak it. But it was, unfortunately, a three putt on 17.
Absolutely. I think attitude is a really important thing that you mentioned there. Even when he was down, he was seeing that silver lining of it only takes 1 week. And I think what he's been through, the journey he's been on to get to this point, of course, he had those issues with testicular cancer not so long ago. Once you've recovered from that and then you get back on tour, you know, it puts things in perspective. And although obviously it means the world to him and you could see the emotions he was going through on the back nine and the disappointment when he didn't get over the line. But ultimately, I think the perspective and that overall positive outlook and how the journey he's been on and things he's been through have taught him to kind of look on the bright side, essentially, because that's sometimes all you can do is have a positive mental attitude. That shone through, and like it's that 1 week that saved his season.
Does he kick himself, Richard, because he bogeyed two of the last four? If he pars, any wins?
Yes, he does, yeah, because I think that's the lack of being in contention that does that. You know, I always look at it every week, Robert. You look at the last six holes of anyone that finishes second or third, and if they're two or three over, all they can do is kick themselves.
But you've got to say, for Perez, it was the opposite. He never looked like dropping a
what
shot.
What did he do? He birdied 14, didn't he?
Yeah, he birdied 14, and the tee shot he hit at 17 was...
Oh, it was a ripper.
Just top draw, down the middle with a hint of fade, without a bounds on the right.
I thought Southgate did well to find just the left edge of the rough there, to be honest, after that tee shot.
And how brilliant was Southgate's second?
Brilliant, best shot of the day.
And unfortunately, he three-putted it, yeah. But for Perez... The luxury of his go-for-it tee shot meant he had about 179, I think, for his second. He could afford to fly the bunker. Almost didn't, actually. But he didn't look like putting a foot wrong, Perez, coming in.
No, he looked...
Every swing he made was really, really good.
His name has been appearing, Robert, on the leaderboard a few times over the last 6 months. And I know he's a big hitting. I always thought he was Spanish when he first came out.
No glove.
He's not. Does he not wear a glove?
No
I didn't
glove.
Even notice that.
No glove.
Really?
Well, we'll double check it with him when he comes on the line. But
we will
I'm sure I saw no glove.
Well, it's interesting that he also had Rory's former caddy, JP Fitzgerald, on the bag. And
yes.
Obviously, there's been a bit of attention around that, and he was asked about it. But he was very quick to give him credit as well.
He did, yeah.
About the whole week, not just in the final round, but, you know, JP's knowledge of the courses. And I think it just enabled Victor to kind of get out of his own way, if you like, because the talent is obviously there. Another thing about him, he's an absolute spitting image of Steven Gerrard when he's got that woolly hat on. From the
yes.
When the coverage started, the first couple of times I saw him, I generally had to check that Steven Gerrard wasn't in the field as an amateur. He looks that much like him.
He does look a lot like him.
I thought Jordan and Lagergren looked very similar as well.
Yeah, it's the nose, I think, a lot of the time is what does it. But a Gerrard lookalike, and winning in Scotland. I wonder if living in Dundee ever gets pulled over by anyone in his local coffee shop or pub asking for Steven Gerrard's autograph now he's managing at Rangers.
And I wonder if you live in Dundee and you sort of, like Richard, wherever he lays his hat. That's the football team he supports. So when he's in Dundee, is he Dundee or Dundee United?
I don't know, but we will ask.
You can almost touch both grounds, you know. Have you ever been there?
What, to Dundee?
The two grounds are so close. It's unbelievable, close. It's incredible that a town like that can have two football clubs, like, less than a wedge apart. Social media. Third win of the season from the class of 2008. This is from the Challenge Tour. Well played, Victor Perez at the Dunhill Links. That's hashtagged. Alfred Dunhill Links Championship says Victor Perez becomes the first French winner of the Dunhill Links Championship. We spotted that. Don't you like the way it's the League of Nations, the European Tour, that when the Spaniards win, all the Spaniards wait on the green.
Yeah.
When the Portuguese win, the Portuguese are on the... And when the French win, the French are always on the green. There's always a bottle of shampoo.
Yeah, no, I like all that. That was good.
We Brits don't tend to do that.
I would, when you won in Cannes, I was there. I was looking bottle, but by goodness gracious me, it cost a lot of money, and I thought, you know what, I'll sprinkle him in Perrier.
I think we should speak to Victor Perez. What do you think?
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, let's get him on the line. Victor, a man from France, a globe-trotting young millionaire, travelling the world, and he decides to take root in Dundee. Just explain that, first of all, before we get into the golf.
Well, obviously, like, as I feel everybody knows now, my girlfriend lives here, which is one of the reasons why I decided to come here. We felt like to be able to just be with her and, live here. And then the second of all, I think the golf, I think the culture here in Scotland is just quite different than the ones that we have in France. I think golf in France is growing, but it's not quite at the level that it would be in the UK.
Victor, where did you... I see you shot two 64s in the first three rounds. Where did you shoot your 64s? Because it's Kings Barnes, Carnoustie and St Andrews the first three rounds. Where were your 64s?
At St Andrews the first day, yeah, and then at Kings Barnes the third day.
Oh, right. Well, because 68 at Carnoustie, that's a pretty good score. I think, personally, having played all those courses many, many times, I personally think Carnoustie is the hardest one of the three.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree completely. We got a little bit fortunate. I felt like the third day was the win. Like, out of the first three, the Saturday was the windiest day, and I was at Kings Barnes, which is the most generous places off the tee out of the three. So I felt like, you know, I mean, there's always a little bit of fortune as far as the draw. And I felt like on Friday at Carnoustie, it was windy, but it wasn't like, you know, the true heavy Scottish wind. And I felt like 400 definitely kept me quite in it.
Victor, hi, Kit Alexander here. I've got a two-part question for you. First of all, Rory's former caddy, JP, was on the bag for you. How much of an influence has he been to this victory, and what has he brought to the team in general? And also, now you're living in Scotland, watching on TV yesterday, you look like an absolute spitting image of Steven Gerrard from the side, the former footballer, now Rangers manager. Just wondering if anyone else has said you look like Steven Gerrard.
I haven't heard that one yet, but I'll take it. I think the career that he's had, I think, I'll definitely take that one. And to come back to D, I mean, it's obviously a tremendous advantage to have him on the bag, just being so experienced with all the guys that he had. And I think, you know, obviously being on Rory's back for X amount of years prior, and, you know, you can't really teach that kind of experience, just being used to, you know, being in the final round. You know, I feel like having someone that comfortable on the bag going down the stretch obviously makes a huge difference, because you try to get that vibe that he's on, and just being... He's right in the happy medium where he's not too relaxed and he's just as focused, which I thought was ideal for me.
Victor, coming down the stretch, very difficult to win any tournament on the European Tour, especially in Scotland. It's extra special. St Andrews as the Sunday venue, it's amazing. And it looked like for the majority of the back half of the back nine, it was going to be you or Matthew Southgate. Did the Pro-Am format help you to relax a little more than you might have done had you been on your own?
I mean, definitely through the front nine, I felt like the tournament was wide open, because anybody at 16, 17, 18 under could have posted 8 under, you know, get to 25, 25 under, and then be like, beat that, you know. And I felt like nobody really put on a charge. I felt like the condition, the wind being across, you know, didn't really give any given holes. Like, none of the holes were really, like, easy per se. Like, I feel like at St. Andrews, if you play... You know, 1-9 straight down. If you play the front nine straight down, you're going to have a lot of chances, and you better score, because obviously the way home is going to be tough. But I think the win made it, you know, very even. I thought it was harder to make birdies than it would have been if it was a different win. Luckily for us, nobody charged. And so when we turn after 10, you know, we still had a 3-shot lead. I was just like, okay, we're probably, one of us is going to shoot under par in the back nine to win, I would imagine. And so I was just like, well, that means the other guys have to shoot at least 5 under on the back nine to win or tie. And I was just like, that would be quite difficult. And they got close. I think I was looking back at some of the highlights yesterday. I think Joachim and Paul got it up to 21 after 16, and they both bogeyed 17. But I felt coming down 13, 14. I was just like, it's either going to be him or me. And playing with the amateurs, I mean, makes it a little bit more relaxed. I think it definitely makes the pace a bit different than it would be. It's not as fast as a regular Sunday. You have a little bit more time to regroup. And so, yeah, maybe he played to madness. Maybe not. I'm not sure, but it worked out.
Victor, let me ask you, I'm having a little bit of a discussion with Robert Lee here about, I was popping in and out of the lounge yesterday watching the golf. Now, he said to me that you play with no glove on. I said, I don't think that's right. I said, possibly when putting. So who's right, who's wrong? There's going to be two questions I'm going to ask you. First of all, yes to a glove or no?
No glove.
No glove. Can you hear the money coming out of my wallet now towards Robert Lee? Which is, first of all, very painful. But secondly, no Spanish Open this week. Had you planned to play in it or not?
No, I wasn't planning on it because the line for the Italian Open came out a couple weeks ago and I was the last man in on the regular on my Challenge Tour category.
Ah, right. Well, actually, how old are you, Victor?
27.
27. Can you say, so what year were you born?
1992.
1992. Do you know who won the Italian Open in 1990?
A Frenchman?
No, it was me.
No, yeah,
I just thought you'd remember that.
Much nearer home than that, Victor.
I only won by five, Victor.
So, Victor, how exciting is the end of your season now with where you are in the world rankings, where you are in the race to Dubai and all the stuff that's coming your way?
I mean, obviously, like a big change. I think there's going to be some discussions with the people around me as far as, you know, probably playing in the WGC and then, you know, obviously guaranteeing all the way to the race to Dubai and being in a great position to, you know, finish really high on the ranking. I mean, obviously, like, schedule is going to change and expectations are going to change. And 2 weeks ago, I was like, okay, I got to, you know, try to get to the race to Dubai. That would have been a big goal. And now the card have been dealt completely differently.
Victor, a fabulous win. You played superbly well coming down the stretch at St. Andrews. Things could not be better. Thanks very much for spending time with us on the Race to Dubai show.
Of course.
And now, after having watched you play closely, I'm excited to see you play the rest of the season.
Cheers, thank you.
Okay, stats-wise, Perez graduated from the European Challenge Tour after finishing third on the rankings last season, which means you can play golf for a long time and sustain it. And he now moves into the top 70 in the official world rankings. Top 50 this year make the final event, Dubai World Tour Championship.
Correct and right. DP World Tour Championship.
DP World Tour Championship, that's it. It's full title.
Yeah.
And top 20 in the Race Dubai rankings presented by Rolex. So now he's looking at that top 50 in the world. That really does change everything that you look at in the future, if you can get inside the world's top 50.
Yeah.
Matthew Southgate could console himself with an important outright second place finish, which secures his European Tour card for 2020 after a disappointing season up to this point. OK, let's hear from the runner-up, Matthew Southgate.
Oh, I've done everything I could do, really. I was quite impressed with how level-headed I stayed and felt amazingly calm, really, all day, which was quite a surprise, to be honest. I thought I might be a little bit more excited and kept the rhythm great with my swing. I didn't miss a long shot really all day. If anything, I ate a couple too good that went a little bit further past the flag than what I would like. But all in all, it's been a horrible season for me, and this has sorted that right out and got us right back in the hunt for getting Race Dubai. And that's the goal for me, really. And I think I've proven to the world this week that when I do switch it on, I can mix it with the best. And I've beaten a hell of a lot of good players this week. And it's sore now after that chip shot on 14 and dropping one on 17 after the second shot, but I'm sure when it all comes out in the wash, I'll be having a beer somewhere and a smile with some good friends, and I'm going to look back on this week as a huge success and a massive achievement in my career to shoot four scores like that on four rounds on those golf courses that we played this week.
You alluded to it there. We saw that level-headedness all week. What has changed to bring that level-headedness to your game?
I have no idea, to be honest. I've just been working hard at my game and found a lot of trust in myself, and the results in practice have been so solid that it's a comfort zone. You know, you get on the first tee, you don't expect to hit many bad shots because there's no reason to, and it's a nice place. It's a nice place to be mentally. Yeah.
Great unique week, the prime format, the three courses. Are you looking forward to getting back to the normal routine next time?
I'm looking forward to having a lie down, to be honest. No, I enjoyed the pro-am format. Peter Dawson's become a great friend of mine, and he's so encouraging on the way around. Like, you know, part of me wanted to just win it for myself, and a big chunk of me wanted to win it for him as well. And I'm looking forward to having a bit of time off, to be honest. This is seven on the spin for me, and I'm out on my feet, and couple of weeks, recharge, come back, you know, big finish to the season. Hopefully get a win maybe somewhere the rest of the season.
Yeah, good performance from Matthew Southgate, and obviously that second place and the money and the points that go with that is going to secure him for next season, which is great. Peter Dawson, by the way, canny little player.
He can play. I watched the swing.
Nice movement.
It was. And you could see when he knocked it on the green, he was sort of, you know, that gritty sort of, come on, Southgate, we need a three out of you.
Mm. Tommy Fleetwood finished three shots off the top spot in tied fifth. Let's hear from Tommy.
Thursday played great. Today played really lovely. Just sat, you know, those two rounds that were kind of sandwiched in the middle that weren't that great. So just really happy to get that last final round. And at the end of the day, it's going to be a really good result by the looks of it, seeing how the other guys come in. So you've got to be happy. I think it's nice to end the week on a really positive note moving forward when you've got a couple of weeks of practice to come before other events.
So what was the difference today in your game?
Put in for sure. I hit it better today. Gave myself a lot more good looks at it. And I put it, you know, really started hauling putts on. We teed off on the back nine, so the front nine. Just started hauling putts on that nine, and when you get a run going, it's just great, especially on these greens where you feel like, you know, hit the ball at the hole and, like, you know, it can sort of wiggle either way. That's like links golf. So if you can get on a good roll with momentum, then it makes a massive, massive difference. And that was it, really. You know, once it got going, felt really good.
Well, Tommy, of course, won the team prize with his prime partner, Ogden Phipps II.
Yes.
They tied the McIlroys, actually.
They did, Jerry McIlroy.
Both 39 under, I think. Wasn't that the score?
39 under par. That's a lot under par.
And the countback was the pro score, which Rory thought. What do you think about that?
Sorry, Kit.
Very questionable countback rule, I think, that. The pro score in the final round. I think it's a pro-am. It's a team event. Surely it should be.
I think it's a team score. I think Rory's got a point.
I think the McIlroys do have grounds to feel a touch hard done by there, but all credit to Tommy and Ogden nonetheless.
And Jerry played great, apparently. Rory said his dad played unbelievably well, so, and doesn't get many shots. I think only three shots his dad gets.
Yeah, his dad's lowest single-finger handicap, yeah.
He shot three under par gross around King's Barnes, Rory's dad. That shows you how good a golfer he really is.
Front tees. Right?
It's all in the DNA, isn't it?
It is, yes. You know, I taught him everything he knew.
There's young Rory. He was chipping balls into a washing machine when he was about two.
Well, it's interesting you say the DNA. If you compare the two swings, obviously there are some big differences, but there are some very big similarities. You know, the finish position is virtually the same. So the club shaft, especially of the two of them, you can certainly see the ways in which Rory, as a very young kid, watching his father Jerry swinging the club, has influenced the action and the technique that he has now. So you can kind of jest about it. And obviously, Jerry never quite hit the heights that Rory did, despite being a very good amateur player and still shooting some good scores. But certainly the influence was there.
Yeah. Do you know why I always think, Robert, you can tell people's personality by their swing? You know, mine was a bit of a jerk.
Have you seen Kit's swing?
I haven't seen
Kit. No, I've not seen him. He talks about it a lot. I haven't seen the swing itself.
Stand up, Kit, and one foot in the air and give us a swing.
I wish I could. McGinley, in a pro-am a few years ago, just before he was Ryder Cup captain in the Wales Open, and he likened my swing to that of Luke Donald. So I will take that all day long.
Was that when Luke was world number one, or when he fell off the top of the cliff?
At the moment, my swing very much resembles any injured golfer's swing, yeah.
So, yeah, we talked about Rory. Played very well, but didn't finish as high as he would have wanted. It was a very low-scoring week. Let's talk about conditions. I think the golf course was set up pretty good.
If you turn up to the Dunhill Links, you know what you're going to get.
Exactly.
Essentially, it's going to be set up so it is scorable for 14, 16, perhaps 18 handicappers, well as the pros.
That's right.
The scoring conditions were excellent over the first 3 days. As we all know with links golf, if you don't get much wind, and it's sort of relatively balmy temperatures, then you're going to score well around there. The old lady did bare its teeth a little bit on the Sunday in the final round, and we saw the tougher scoring conditions, which sort of hinted at what it can be like. But I thought the courses were presented well. The standard of golf was excellent. And that's what this tournament brings. If you sign up for the Dunhill Links, you are signing up for an easier than perhaps normal setup and very low scoring.
But, you know, you ask the Justin Timberlakes and the Jamie Redknapps and the Huey Lewises and the Vinnie Jones and all the guys, celebrities and actors and business people that play in that, the first thing they look for after the Dunhill Links Championship finishes on the Sunday is their invitation for the next year. That's the first thing all these people from around the world look for. They just absolutely love coming to play there. Because, Richard, St Andrews is a very special place.
They all are very special. St Andrews especially is. You know, to be fairly honest, Rob, when I first went to St Andrews as a young lad of about 17, I looked at it, I thought, what's all this about? Because I didn't know you know, I had a local caddy and he took around and thought, well, this is, you know, I thought this was supposed to be absolutely fantastic.
You're talking about the course itself.
About the course itself. Yeah. And then when you get out, but then when the caddies start talking to you and they're discussing the course and where to aim and all that, you think, actually, it's pretty, and then it's all comes
clever.
Together.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a slow burn, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You get that. You're not wowed straight away.
No.
You're wowed by the town and the setting. It's second to none. There's nowhere like it. And the atmosphere, even on a cold December day around that 18th green first tee, is absolutely incredible. It just is.
The first fairway and the 18th fairway, Kit, if you know what I'm... I think you'll understand what I mean.
I said what you're going to say now. Yes. I said this to someone 5 days ago.
Right, OK, well, let's see whether you did. I think the fairway, it's so wide, it's narrow. Were you going to say that?
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah,
Richard,
it is.
Richard Boxall says this fairway's so wide, it's narrow.
It's too narrow. Yeah, do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you do feel... I think you feel the pressure of history stood on those tees because... And also that what you mentioned about the design there, where it is easy to bail out around St Andrews, but the beauty of the way it's designed and the beauty of many of the great courses is the easier shot you take on now... the more difficult your next shot is going to be. So you're always feeling the further you can bear yourself to take it up the right-hand side on that 18th, the better angle you'll have for a pitch or an approach shot into that final green. You can bail out left as much as you want, but it makes it more difficult. It brings the Valley of Sin into play even more. It's an unbelievable place, St Andrews. If you're a golfer, even if you're not, to be honest, if you're just a sports fan, you have to visit there at least once. It sits right in the town. Everything is about golf there. It has a real atmosphere, a buzz at all times. Actually, there's a pro guy that plays on the PGA Euro Pro Tour called Neil Fenwick, Scottish pro, really good player. And he played St Andrews for the first time in the Old Course in his life, incredibly, about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And he eagled the 18th. And he said the crowd, there were probably 40 or 50 people, and they went absolutely crazy, jumped up and down. He ran round high-fiving them all. It was for 8 under par as well, incredibly, so some round of golf. But that tells you everything you need to know. There's always a crowd there. They're always interested. There's always a buzz. And to hold something like that, and Victor will know that, where better place to hold a winning putt than on the 18th green of St Andrews? I mean, that's the stuff that dreams are made of.
Some of the other runners and riders, Sweden's Joachim Lagergren finished 20 under par. That's a top four finish, a 20 under par.
Well, listen, a top four
finish...
You've
played some golf, haven't you? It'd be 20 under par. Even if the conditions were fairly benign.
You've shot level 67, it's as simple as that. Each par of each course is 72.
Including Carnoustie, by the way, for one of them.
That's fairly good golf, isn't it? I see you ploughing up and down a score sheet there. What are you actually looking for?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm looking, because Paul Waring had a very good event and played some really good golf. If he could hole a few putts, you'd be looking at a different player. And Rory McIlroy, who finished with a 67 for 15 under par for 4 days, that was only good enough for tied 26th.
That's amazing.
15 under par.
15 under par. I mean, how many people... On this one page here, it goes up to 46 players, 12 under or better. There must have been more than... Well, obviously, there was more than 50 players in double figures under par.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. Now, Richard, top 10 then from the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship.
OK, top 10 from the Alfred Dunhill. Tied 10th was Callum Shinquin, Richie Ramsey, Andre Pavan, Tony Finau and Luke Donald at 18 under par. And then you've got tied 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 was Tommy Fleetwood, Matthew Jordan, Tom Lewis, Jordan Smith, and Yang Hun Wang. And then third tied with Lagergren was Paul Waring. They were at 20 under par. And then 21 under was Matthew Southgate. And the winner was Victor Perez, Frenchman, 22 under, all the ducks.
Now, last week's predictions, I have been hammering young Daniel Roebuck for every time I build up a nice lead for the presenters, he brings me back down and I have to keep recovering.
He gives you some stick when you're not here.
Well, he should, but and he can this week because I've regressed. The presenter score has come down 10 points because I missed the cut with Brandon Wu and I missed the cut with John Rahm. Who'd have thought John Rahm would have missed the cut there? Loves Lynx golf, doesn't he? He won the Irish Open a couple of times. Yeah, so I'm minus 10 with Wu and Rahm. Chris Ryan, who was in the guest spot, went for Tyrrell Hatton, 5 points. Andrew Johnson, the beef, missed the cut, minus 5 points. So he was carbon neutral, 0 points for him. And Jamie Spence went for Shane Lowry, tied 15th, 5 points. Tied 15th, by the way, around that golf course, was 17 under par. Robert McIntyre was tied 26th. So it's 5 points for Spence, the only man to make any progress. Therefore, the combined scores are presenters are down via my horrendous picking to 175. Co-presenters up to 130. Guests stay on 105 points. In the fancy race to Dubai game, Lee Finlay is still the leader on 30,183 points. The weekly title went to Dan Mann, whose team contained Matthew Southgate and Victor Perez. How do you pick with form this year, Matthew Southgate and Victor Perez? In that field,
you can't.
How do you pick those?
You can't pick them. But I've got
Dan the man.
I've got two.
You have to explain yourself. How did you come up with those two? Very well played, Dan man.
He's getting a bit excited.
If you want to get involved, if you want to get involved, you can do by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. Richard, top 10 in the race to Dubai.
Louis Oosthuizen is 10th. Christian Bezuidenhout is 9th. 8th is Danny Willett. Eric Van Rijn is 7th. Matthew Fitzpatrick is 6th. Tommy Fleetwood is 5th. 4th is Matt Wallace. 3rd, Bernd Wiesberger. 2nd, John Rahm. And leading the way is Shane Lowry still.
In other news, Lars van Meel won his first European Challenge Tour title, carding a bogey-free final round of 67. That's 5 under par to win the Hops Open de Provence. The Dutchman playing is just his second Challenge Tour season, only dropped one shot over the weekend at the Seve Ballesteros Design Golf International DuPont Royal. I'd say next up, the Challenge Tour is off to Morocco this weekend, so we're looking forward to watching how they do there. Because they're coming to the end of their season, all these tournaments are very important. Jose Caceres held off the challenge of major champion Paul Lawrie to collect his second Stacia Tour win of the season at the Moorhof Legends Austrian Senior Open. The Argentine, who began the day with a six-shot lead after carding a course record of 10 under par 62 on the Saturday, eventually won by four shots. The Stacia now travels to Coventry, England, for the Farm Foods European Senior Masters at the Forest of Arden Country Club. Oh, that's in Meriden, the centre of England.
Centre of England, yes. That's, and what, right, a wicked one. I remember 2-tee start. I remember that ninth hole.
I was just going to say, the ninth hole, you could wake up screaming and wriggling in the middle of the night.
It was a wicked tee shot.
Off that back
second
tee.
Second shot was all right, but just the tee shot.
Do you think they'll have the old boys off the back tee, the very back tee there? Where do you think they'll have them playing from?
I don't think, to be quite honest, Robbie, you remember when we played there, there wasn't a lot of room in front of that. It was all water, wasn't it? Unless you went down the left and took the water out of play. But that couldn't happen. Birded it most days. But Jose Caceres, you remember him, Kit? I don't know whether you will remember him, do you?
It's a name I'm aware of, but I'm a little bit too young to probably know much about him from his pomp.
I can still remember Jose's swing. But on the PGA Tour, I've got to say Cameron Champ, well played, because he's had a torrid time after winning in the wraparound season last year, and everyone said he was going to be the next big thing. He's been blighted with injury and loss of confidence, and now the 24-year-old has won again, the Safeway Open in Napa Valley, second PGA Tour title, and he made a 3-foot birdie putt on the 18th hole for a one-stroke win over Adam Hadwin, a 59-shooter at the Silverado Resort, which is synonymous, of course, with Johnny Miller. And Cameron Champ, by the way, oh my God, people hitting the ball a long way. I've stood behind him on the range now a couple of times. You maybe haven't seen him hit it live.
No, I haven't, no.
Richard, it's unbelievable.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like a low squealing fade that carries about 330 and then wants to run. Oh, it's unbelievable. And I tell you what, watching him hit it, I think there's another 15% in there if he wants
do
it.
Do you?
Honestly.
Did you ever hit it at 85%?
No, my drives were all sort of one pace. They're all the same, yeah.
Yeah, well, likewise.
I never got on the tee and thought I'll hit an easy driver down here.
No,
I mean, I might have gone down the grip and teed it low and hit squeeze fade, but it was the same amount of strength and power.
Oh, yeah.
And lots of it.
Raw.
Stand back, you'll get sucked in. Stand back.
I'm going to hit a big one.
A couple of things about Cameron Champ as well, if I can jump in. Actually, he gets, obviously, he's the longest hitter on the PGA Tour, and that's what gets him a lot of credit and headlines. But it was his short game and putting that he had to rely on in the final round for this most recent win. He only hit sort of four fairways all day. So that bodes well, not only the power, but also the finesse in the short game. And also on an emotional and personal level, before this tournament started last week, he was told his grandfather had stage 4 cancer. The family had been keeping it from him so he could focus on his golf. But he went home. His father, the grandfather's being cared at by his parents at home. So they broke the news to him. So an incredibly emotional week for him. He had Popper Champ, which he calls his grandfather, written on everything, all over his clubs, his equipment, his shoes, his balls. And that has obviously inspired him to victory. So, a really heartfelt one. I think everyone was happy to see him get over the line there with what's been going on for him and his family off the course as well. Lots of emotions running high there. But it was beautiful to see him afterwards and get straight on the phone to his grandfather as well.
If you're a real golf geek, Richard, and I know you are, The thing about him hitting the ball as far as he does, people like Rory who hit the ball a long way, they very much hit it on the up. They hit it plus three, plus four, plus five on the upswing. He's one down. He's minus one when he hits the ball, which for a long hitter is pretty remarkable.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so a very talented young guy. We are in the era of very young, talented players. They're coming through the floorboards, aren't they? And good to see Cameron Champ with all going on in the background, managing to win for the second time on the PGA Tour in just about 12 months. Really well done. Now, Richard, top 10 in the world, please. That'd be great.
10th is Bryson DeChambeau. Xander Schauffele is 9th. 8th is Tiger Woods. Patrick Cantlay is 7th. Justin Thomas is 6th. John Rahm is 5th. 4th is Justin Rose. Dustin Johnson is 3rd. 2nd is Rory McIlroy. Guess who leads the way?
I'm going to say it's the best player in the world last year, world number one, and that is young Brooks Koepka.
Correct and right, Robert Lee. You're through to the next round.
Now, this week on the European Tour, we're going to Spain for the Spanish Open. It's the Mucho Activos Open de España. Club de Campo, Richard. You know it well.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm not going to blow hot air, but I'm going to for a little bit. I finished second there 1 year. I always used to like the Spanish Open. I don't know why it was, but I always used to play quite well. And a couple of times I was second in that.
Yeah, Club de Campo, lovely golf course, Richard. It's not been around that long, has it?
No, 1956, actually, it was open. Yeah, Javier Arana designed it. It's called the Black Course. I'm going to do it in metres because our producer hasn't given me it in yards. So it's 6,504 metres, which would equate to about 7,100 yards, I suppose.
At altitude?
Yeah, par of 71. No, it's one of those sort of old school courses that you know, we used to love playing in Europe, Robert.
The tees next to the greens type thing. Yes, yeah,
exactly. No big wide bunkers, just properly designed. Got to shape the ball around the course left to right and right to left, Robert, you know, like it was in the old days.
High shots, low shots. Yeah. Yeah. And tell you what,
if
you drive the ball well, hit some crisp irons and putt well, you'll do well.
And if you finish one ahead of everybody else, you could well
pick up. The game's never changed.
First prize.
Tell us who's in the field, Kit.
It's a pretty heavily Spanish field at the top there. You've got Sergio Garcia, John Rahm, who's the defending champion, Rafa Cabrera Bello. You look a little bit further down, Andrea Pavans coming in with good form, Jorge Campillo, Justin Harding, who's just around the edge of the top 50, possibly looking for a President's Cup pick as well. And then Alex Bjork, Alex Levy, Pablo Larrazabal. Some interesting names in there. And also, if you look down a little bit, there's some guys, obviously, at this stage of the season, really chasing, trying to maintain their cards outside the top 110 at the moment. So someone could come in and do what Joachim Lagergren and Matt Southgate have done in recent weeks, a really good opportunity to someone from emerge from the pack and turn their season from a relatively poor one into a very successful one.
It's a nice title, Richard, isn't it? Spanish Open title.
Spanish Open.
Yeah, if you're the Spanish
Open.
It's very
old. It's a very old tournament. It's been going, it's around a long, long time. It's a little bit, it's not quite as long as the French Open or the South African Open, but it's, you know, Spanish. It was one of the tournaments you never missed.
Yeah,
ever.
But think of Seve and Jose Maria and Miguel and all the great Spanish players.
I'm going to mention something about Seve. That was the hardest bit of commentary I've ever had to do. Was at about 5 o'clock in the morning, I got a phone call. Seve's died, and the hardest bit of commentary I had to do was that Saturday in the afternoon because we were playing the Spanish Open. He died on the Friday night. It was brutal.
Yeah, I mean,
it was really tough.
It's the timing of it, isn't it? I mean, everyone knew he was gravely ill, and
well, yeah, and you know, there's another thing. That's what you know.
He should be around now, Seve, playing, you know, playing Champions Tour golf.
What would he be, 62 now?
I mean, we were robbed of obviously a hugely charismatic man, a great golfer. As you say, probably not as old as some people of my sort of generation or a bit younger. We were robbed of it, and it would have been so great if he'd have been around as an ambassador for the game for so much longer than he was. But events like the Spanish Open with all of its history, the Ryder Cup, the Open, they will always be synonymous with him. They will always bring back the memories of him, and I think that's what's truly special. His memory and his influence will live on, and it will never, ever decline. It will only ever get greater and be more impressive. And we can all enjoy looking back on the footage of him winning these events, talk about it like we are now going forward as his legacy deserves.
Let me tell you one thing about Seve. And you meet very few people in your life. Doesn't matter what they've done or what they do or anything like that. You meet very few people in your life that it would be impossible to miss the moment they walked into a room.
Yeah, no, that's very true.
And Seve was one of those. If he walks into a room, nobody in the room ever missed it, ever. So we've talked about the golf course, we talked about some of the top contenders, but the question to be answered now is, Who are your two predictions for the fantasy race to Dubai?
Me or Kit?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Kit first.
Okay,
Kit gets first dibs. You can have both yours. You can go both.
So I think the honour of going first means that I get to pick John Rahm, defending champion, albeit at a different course, but he is Spanish playing on home soil, although he spent a lot of time in the States. 13 top 10s this year in fantastic form, winner of the Irish Open and runner-up at Wentworth just a couple of weeks ago. Not bothered by the Dunhill Links result at all. It's kind of a bit of an outlier of a tournament often when judging form. So John Rahm for me is the bookie's favourite and he is my overwhelming favourite. And my guy from outside the top 50 last year is Rickard Karlberg, the Swede. Coming back this year from a long injury layoff, didn't play at all in 2018. He's got pedigree though, won the 2015 Italian Open, has been as high as 70th in the world ranking just a couple of years ago prior to that injury. This season, four top sixes, no miscuts in his last eight starts, straddling the European and the Challenge Tour. He's playing really well, and he's a good fit for this golf course as well. Not hugely long, quite old school, and Rickard Karlberg is a good ball striker, very accurate, inside the top 20 on the tour in greens in regulation and driving accuracy. I think everything is pointing towards a good week for him.
So just, sorry, remind me of your two picks there.
Yeah, no, and amongst those stats, what were your two?
John Rahm and Rickard Karlberg.
Just two names, thank you very much. Two names. Just to remind you of the format, you get two picks, one from outside last year's top 50 in the race to Dubai, and anyone else you think might win. 20 points for a win, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5, crucially, for an MC, a missed cut. So we've heard Kit Alexander's picks, Richard, and yours are?
Mine, I haven't got as many stats as that, I'm afraid to say.
Well, I'm only after two names.
I know. Well, I'm going to go for Rafa Cabrera Bello.
Beautifully pronounced.
I'm going to go for a past champion. I'm going to go for James Morrison, who was outside the top 50 last year.
Now, I think that's quite a canny pick, James Morrison.
It's his sort of course.
And he's playing much better.
I like that. James Morrison, I think, is a good pick. Yeah. Showing a little form and the guy as well.
My two picks are, I'm going to go all Spanish. I've got to go for Sergio Garcia, who won recently in Holland. Of course, he went across there and played in the KLM. He was victorious, so I think another win coming around the corner for him. And my outside the top 50 player last year is another Spaniard, Pablo Larrazábal.
Ah, right, yes. No, he's a good player, isn't
he? So I'm going for a bit of Pablo and a bit of Sergio. Should be fun. That is it for now. Remember, you can stay up to date with the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next week, we'll have a full review of the Mucho Activos Open de España. Plus, we'll also look ahead to the next event on the European Tour, the Italian Open. It's a Rolex Series event. But for now, from Kit Alexander, Richard Boxall, and me, Robert Lee, it's goodbye.